You pressed play on this podcast with the click of curiosity. It is another dimension, a dimension of mind, a dimension where nothing is sacred and everything is explainable. You're streaming into a land of both inside and outside, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the midside.
Welcome to the midside, where it's illegal to boycott the midside. If you enjoy your trip here today, please tell a friend. Referrals are our number one source of tourism. Alternately, you can give us a five-star review on iTunes or support us on Patreon, patreon.com/themidside. That is a per-episode donation for our work. It is not a flat fee per month. Funny thing about that, Midsider Josh, a few minutes before the show, sent me a website where somebody rails on Patreon for, apparently they are now banning people from Patreon for content they don't like, and he said that he is disappointed in us, so we might have to up our game here in the Midside and see if we can get banned from Patreon, really, really canceled from the internet, as we joke about. I'm your host, Justin M. Wisniewski. Joining me this week from our nation's capital, Daniel T. Richards.
And it is a glorious day to be joining you. It is a mere 109 degrees outside and 1,000% humidity, so.
No.
No, it just feels that way. Clearly it's not, but living in.
That sounds like an inconvenient truth.
Living in a literal swamp is just the fucking worst. You just can't go outside. Every time you go outside, it's like, oh, am I wearing a wet sweater? No, I'm not. I'm just outside.
You are wearing a wet sweater. It's called the atmosphere of DC.
That's right. Ugh. Hashtag fake weather. It's terrible.
Geostorm. It's like you're living two movie trailers in one.
That's right.
Also joining us from the hills of white privilege, James Elias.
I'm actually really excited this week because I just last week started my own podcast. So if you guys want to check that out, we explore the philosophy of this new classical liberal movement. If you're a big fan of Dave Rubin and Sam Harris, Jordan Peterson, what I try to do is there's this movement, you know, what we've called it sort of on the midside, we've called it the Galt Right, but that not everyone's going to really get that. And although we're sort of a smaller section of the classical liberal tradition, which is the Galt Right. But I talk about the classical liberal values in general, which, you know, basically means return to Enlightenment philosophy and what that entails exactly. So, for example, on my last episode, we break down Sam Harris's interview with Scott Adams and sort of explain how full of shit he is, basically. Scott Adams is, that is. So
where can people find this podcast, James?
Oh, yes. I'm glad you asked, Daniel. Mm-hmm. It's just James Elias on YouTube or James Elias on Podbean or James Elias on Patreon. So it's just my name. That's it. It's all about me, baby.
Yeah, so when you say we, you mean you talk about these things.
Yes, the royal we. When I say we, I mean me, yes.
Well, I'm glad you're excited this week. I'm not as excited this week because we had a celebrity death this week. Mm. And, you know, I know there's celebrity deaths all the time, but I actually found the reaction to this celebrity death interesting because, I don't know, maybe it's our generation. I'd say we're all like basically the same generation, but the lead singer of Linkin Park, Chester Bennington, died at age 41. He apparently killed himself in the Pacific Palisades, left behind his band. Obviously, they just released an album this year, and apparently he has six kids as well.
Whoa.
So to me, it's very tragic because of just the people he left behind. But it's also, in a way, it's not just those immediate in the band and his family. I feel like he left all of us behind. And what I mean by that is, Linkin Park was one of the last bands that sort of was a mainstream hit that everybody knew and everybody liked before we had this diversification due to the internet and everyone's in their own little subcultures now. It was Linkin Park was ubiquitous and they really captured teen angst and I think they influenced a lot of people over the years. I mean, in the way we grew up. last night I was seeing Ryan Key, the lead singer of Yellow Card, play acoustic, and he played a Linkin Park song because Yellow Card even toured with Linkin Park at one time, and you know, he drew a lot of influence from them. So you even see that they're a rap rock band, but they're even influencing pop punk. So to me, and I'm just being narcissistic or whatever, but this celebrity death felt like a bigger deal to me than most of them do. All right, now that I've gotten that out of the way, let's move on to things that also might depress us. Let's hit up the news with Daniel T. Richards.
Well, I assure you, Mr. Listener, it really is that bad. These aren't harmless criminals. This isn't just a fad.
In what must be another example of our entire culture reliving the 90s, O.J. Simpson is in the news. This week.
Is that a callback to Chester Bennington?
Well, he's included in it. To say one thing about that, I didn't know what to say after you gave that heartfelt monologue and I was going to shit all over it.
That's okay.
It's one of the, it's these things where it's like, I it was 100% ubiquitous because every single human being in my high school listened to Linkin Park, except me. I was the douche in the corner listening to Benny Goodman and Glenn Miller's orchestra. And Tchaikovsky.
And you're also the douche that's making us talk about O.J. Simpson, so it's appropriate.
That's right. One thing has been consistent in my life. It's that I've been the douche in the corner, away from everyone else. So, O.J. Simpson was granted parole after serving 9 years for a Las Vegas robbery this week. O.J. Simpson was a former football star, both in college and the pros, who was accused of murdering his wife, Nicole Brown Simpson, and her erstwhile lover, Ron Goldman, and was found innocent in a very famous case that has since been made into an FX show called The People vs. O.J. Simpson, and then also an Academy Award-winning documentary. But he was served most recently 9 years in prison for holding a person hostage in their hotel room because he was trying to get back sports memorabilia that he said was stolen from him. The judge gave him one of the harshest sentences, but that is over now. The juice is loose. Justin, what do you think about all this?
Here's my first question about all of this. Is he patient zero for everything that's going on in our culture right now? Because we would not have the Kardashians and everything if not for O.J. Simpson, right? I mean, certainly Paris Hilton escalated things, but he set up all of this, didn't he?
In a weird way, he is the epicenter of everything that is terrible about our culture, yes.
Including Trump, so, you could argue.
How? Do it.
Because, I mean, we now have a celebrity at the... We have this weird crossover between celebrity... BS and politics. Mm-hmm. And I think it started with O.J. Simpson. I'm making fun of my own voice inflection.
So basically what you're saying is Donald Trump is O.J. Simpson meets Bill Clinton.
Oh. You could say that.
We can say whatever we want. So yes, it has been said.
That's what I would say. No,
I think that's a perfect analogy.
A very good point. Thank you, James, with my awesome analogies, right? that was really obscure. I'm sorry. I'm sorry, audience, for the comment I just made. And now I'm stalling to get my thought process back. But no, I think you're 100% correct by making that connection to Donald Trump. And isn't that enough to not give OJ parole? Like, can we just, like, why didn't somebody just roll in, like, old school? Like, roll in a VCR with a... Like, you remember in the high school where they used to do that, a VCR with a TV? Roll that in and then just put on an episode of Keeping with the Kardashians and just point at it. Yeah, fair enough.
Just scream at him, haven't you done enough damage?
Yeah.
That's right.
The judge makes this, like, complex cultural argument that O.J. Simpson was the genesis of everything wrong with our culture right now. And as a result... I give you 1,000 years in prison. May God have mercy on your soul.
His last name is Durangset. Yeah.
Did he get off due to the Chewbacca defense?
This is Chewbacca. Except it's the cultural reverse, which is, this is the Kardashians. And then you're immediately found guilty. So one question I had about this whole thing was a question of justice, which is something we get into sometimes on this show, which is that... O.J. Simpson was found not guilty of the murder of his wife and Ron Goldman. And then when he came up for this crime, the judge saw fit to give him almost the maximum penalty you could get for this kind of thing, whereas in almost every other circumstance, people would get like no jail time to maybe 3 months, or at like the harshest 3 years, and he served 9. So is this an instance where a judge was trying to punish him for a crime that he was found not guilty, but which we all pretty much assume he is guilty? That really is going on here. And is that a good thing? Should we be okay with that as a culture?
Well, that's my whole question about him getting parole as well. I mean, what does it demonstrate that you've been accused of murder and then you go and you hold some guy hostage because your sports memorabilia was taken? Like, you know, we're joking that he's the epicenter, but doesn't that represent like a narcissism too, that you think you're untouchable and you can just do what you want?
Wait, Justin, you're accusing O.J. Simpson of narcissism?
Yes, I'm taking a hard line stance here.
Hot take, everyone. Hot take.
Yeah, hot take. OJ's a narcissist. Do you see the point I'm making, though? Like, isn't that evidence enough that he doesn't deserve to have parole? And that's the whole thing about the question you're asking about the punishment as well, is how do you divorce that context that he was accused of murder from putting him in jail for this crime? And then how do you divorce that context in the parole hearing as well? I don't know. I don't think I'd be able to do that.
Well, it's, and maybe James can speak to this more eloquently than I'm about to, but that's kind of the point of the justice system, right? It, you know, the whole metaphor of the blindfold over the lady justice or whatever her name is. And the idea of like, you can't have forever context in law in most cases. You have to decide on a quote unquote case by case basis. And I think in this case, it was clearly influenced by his past actions, which I don't know. I don't know if I'm okay with that. I would rather have a justice system that looks at things in the context of what you're being accused of and says, this is the crime and it wasn't that bad of a thing, so your punishment is according. I don't know. James?
So are you glad he's free?
That's a different question. Let James answer that and then we can get on to that question.
Okay.
I find myself very I find myself usually with no opinion when it comes to law. Law is a very difficult application of philosophy, or it's a very specialized one for which I haven't thought about it enough, really. But in general, I basically agree with you, Daniel, that we can't. It is an absolute travesty of justice that OJ was let off, but you can't. The legal system can't work this way, where one judge tries to like correct the mistake of another judge. That you can't have it that way. It makes everything too subjective. But then again, I kind of see your point, Justin. You're saying this takes place within a particular context where this last judge who gave Jay-Z, OJ, 9 years.
OJ-Z.
This last judge who gave OJ 9 years. He's taking into account this larger context of basically like, yeah, I am going to give this guy 9 years and not, or, you know, it was supposed to be more than 9. But anyway, I'm going to give this guy the absolute maximum conceivable sentence because I just don't think he's sorry for anything. I think this guy's going to do whatever he feels like he could get away with. And actually, after he got away with murder, I just judge him to be a real danger. And here's the thing. Doesn't the law allow the judge to prescribe the sentence that the judge gave him? This isn't like the judge like broke the law and made some sort of wild exception and just said, forget it, off with his head. Like this was a allowable prison term, right?
It was. And the argument I make there is that if it's within the margins of allowable, but if you look at what happens in these cases, not even sort of on average, but every other time almost, the application is way less harsh. And in this case, it seems to me clear that the judge was adding some sort of punishment because of the previous case and not because...
Right. And Daniel, I have complete sympathy for your point about the slippery slope of judges just, especially in today's social justice relativistic world, being like, oh, well, you know, the jury was fucked up and that's why you didn't get punished for rape, even though that girl ran around and slept with a bunch of guys in the college at the time, you still raped her. So I'm going to punish you now harshly for robbing this convenience store. You're going to go to jail for 25 to life. Like, I get what where you're going for with that. I understand 100%. But in the OJ case, am I being biased? Or was this really a result of everything that's wrong with our culture, especially race relations, getting him off for the original case?
You were. It doesn't make me comfortable that that is a condition in this other case. He was found not guilty. Like that, and for, you know, we on the outside get to say, no, that was a wrong verdict, but he went through the system. He went through the motions. He did what he was supposed to do, i.e. went through a case, was held in prison for a while, etc., and was found not guilty.
Can I agree with you and me? Like, I agree with your argument, yeah. But I also agree with my argument.
All right.
I see where you're going, Justin, but one thing that this could end up being is you could think of this verdict that the judge passed 9 years ago as sort of a Donald Trump in a certain way. And here's what I mean is, like, the reason OJ got off is because of forces that wanted to destroy civilization, to put it quickly. And I'm not, I mean, it's basically leftists who just think, yeah, we basically shouldn't have a justice system. We should basically allocate justice based on the concerns of, you know, minority groups and particular identity groups. And so what ends up happening is, you know, the right, so to speak, says, oh, well, we need to defend civilization. So therefore we're going to throw out the rules and execute justice based on what we feel is right. And what you're doing is you're trumping the situation, because your antidote to the destruction of civilization is further destruction of civilization. Here, throwing out our laws that are supposed to be practiced objectively in favor of what we feel is right.
Yeah, but that's the dick in me, where I'm like, well, if you're going to punch me in the face, I'm just going to punch you harder. Like, that's ultimately the way, that's the difference between me and you guys, is like, at a certain point, like, it's just like, okay, we're running into this wall, well, I'm just going to, like, push the gas further down. Fuck you. Like, so I guess maybe that's a moral failing on my part.
It is.
What other culture... James, like, yes, unequivocally. one other element of this that I wanted to bring up is the other side, which is the condemnation of O.J. Simpson side, which I think is actually... So on the legal side, I'm sort of with O.J. in a certain sense, where it's like, this was a lot to serve for this nonsense crime. But on the cultural condemnation...
I'm putting that on Instagram this week. I'm with O.J. Daniel T. Richards.
That's right.
That's a direct quote.
I'm with him. And then a picture of him holding a knife. Yeah. So... but on the other side, on the cultural condemnation side... I'm totally fucking disgusted by this human being, and I hate it that we're, like, at all nice to him on the cultural side. So, like, the story we picked this week, the Los Angeles Times.
What if everyone just stabbed OJ? What if everyone just stabbed him?
Like, sort of like a la Caesar? Is that what you mean?
Yeah.
Like, we just
A little bit. Yeah, everyone just stabs him a little bit.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. That's
like that episode of Black Mirror where the person has to constantly relive the same day of being tortured and... made to feel shame, ridiculed in front of everyone because of the crime. What if we did that with OJ?
That's right. We made him just rewatch that FX series over and over again. Yeah. Where Cuba Gooding Jr. plays him.
I might watch
him.
A reality show of OJ watching that show.
Well, that's the thing. Like, speaking of reality show, like, there is some rumor that he's in talks to have his own reality show now, where camera crews follow him around. And the other thing is, like, this article is just so insane because it's so deferential to O.J. Simpson. The opening paragraph to this article is, he once drew the spotlight because he sought it. He bathed in it because he loved it. He chased the spotlight until it finally chased him back. He fucking murdered two people. He didn't finally chased him back. He slit their throats. He's an abominable human being. And yes, the law should treat him the same as anyone else who is found innocent of a crime. But culturally, this guy should be off our fucking radar. He's a monster. Let's not – I mean, Jesus, a reality TV show, is that how depraved our culture is right now? I mean, the answer is yes. But Jesus, H. Christos. I don't know.
I think that sums that up.
Okay.
Don't really have much else to add. I mean, I can't say it better than that, so –
Well, speaking of things that are better than other things.
I want to also point out that they somehow managed to mention Donald Trump in this story, too. I thought that was kind of funny.
No.
Well, you did it, too, so what
are you talking about? I had a fucking reason. They didn't. They were like, they couldn't even think of a very good reason to mention him, and he was brought up. And I think they even linked to him somehow. It's like a disease. It's like a mental disease. Like, everything just circles back to Trump and how bad he is.
Yes.
I would agree it is a mental disease.
Oh, there's one other thing in this article before we move on that we can just do quickly, which is something that sort of was caught me off guard, which is the Nevada Parole Board does not require a defendant to or a convict to be remorseful for their crime in order to receive parole. What do you think of that?
I mean, it seems like a baseline thing you would need. Isn't that what we were just talking about with the whole narcissism?
Yeah.
Like, how are you going to not do it again if you don't feel remorse for it?
I think because that's such a subjective concern that they were just like, okay, well, every fucking person asking for parole was, you know, shedding crocodile tears and pretending to be remorseful. So let's just eliminate that whole thing as a standard.
I guess, but I don't know.
But I mean, they have to at least pretend to be sorry. At least you can't just be like, yeah, dude, like, whatever.
I mean, at a certain
I'll do it
point,
again.
Though, I mean, I get
you
what you're saying. It's subjective and it has intention, just like hate crimes. But isn't psychology valid?
Yeah.
When you're trying to figure out whether to give someone parole or not?
You have to at least pretend to be sorry. That is like the bare, that is a necessary condition. Not sufficient, but necessary.
Yeah, jeez. Speaking of things that aren't necessary, sex, according to Cosmopolitan, because they've now given a list.
Perfect, dude!
They've now given a list of 16
really good.
Non-sexual things that are you ready for this? 100 times hotter than sex. 16 non-sexual things that are 100 times
hotter. Before you continue this
sex.
List, I just want to be clear that I found this on their Snapchat channel, and, you know, you click on that, and then you're like, oh, I wonder what this is going to be. This is curious. And then you see what the actual list is, and you're like, really? Really? And then you see the first thing on the list, and then you're like, it can't get worse than that. It can't possibly. And they somehow continue to get worse.
That's right. So this article is by Ziwei Fumido. Is there just a compilation of me fucking up foreigners' names? Okay.
Oh, I thought you were just talking about like a street to go on in D.C. Ziwei Fudo.
No, our streets here are much more simple. They're either a letter or a number or a state. That's it. Okay. So here's the story. When it comes to sex, the internet has pretty much all the porn any woman could ever ask for.
No mention of like actual interaction with men.
Yes.
That's the entire article.
When it comes to sex, comma, the internet has pretty much all the porn. Her premise is that when it comes to sex, comma, the internet. Has anyone told her that the internet is not sex? Has someone told Miss Fumido that you can have sex with other people? Oh my God. Wow. What a way to start an article. But if you're like me, this is Z-Way speaking, not Daniel T. Richards, you may be looking for something to get your rocks off in a totally non-sexual way.
But Daniel T. Richards is with O.J. Simpson, just to be
clear. Again, we could deconstruct the entire... our show could be on these three sentences, by the way. But if you're like me, you may be looking for something to get your rocks off in a totally non-sexual way. What would that look like? What would getting your rocks off mean, like, in a totally non-sexual way?
I'm assuming like there was eating? Like a landslide and there's a bunch of rocks on her deck. So she's trying to get them off her deck.
Yes.
Is what's going on.
Like, isn't it getting your rocks off? Isn't it by definition sexual? And if it's not, isn't that called a fetish?
Yes.
Okay. Thus, I have created a comprehensive list of things that are probably way likelier to give you an orgasm than sex. So wait, she's trying to get an orgasm, but in a non-sexual way.
So confusing.
It's not even bad writing.
It's supposed to just be, has fallen.
It's supposed to be exaggeration and humor, but there is something to take this seriously for a moment, which maybe we shouldn't. There is something deeply wrong here.
I'm not convinced this is supposed to be humor. I've read other Cosmo articles on this show. I'm not convinced this is supposed to be humor.
Yeah, I don't think it's humor at all. I mean, before we go into the article, that was the question I was going to ask. Is in the 90s, Cosmo was all about, like, how to please your man. Like, these best sex tips. And now, tips, whatever.
There's only one sex all tip those words that anyone should care about. But yes, go ahead.
Yeah, and it's mine. Yeah, so now they've changed into this. And they've done a complete 180, which is fucking insane if you think about it. But are all of these publications cashing in all their social cred to hop on this social justice train? And are they going to be able to get off it? And what I mean by that is, well, apparently they don't know how to get off. But what I mean by that is, once this whole social justice trend is over, are people going to take Cosmo seriously and allow them to pivot back? Or like they have they cashed in everything to the point that they're behind this now, and if it fails, they're done?
I don't know. I mean, I assume they can pivot like everyone else pivots, and they'll live off their brand. But the brand is only going to go so far. Every time they pivot, they lose a bit of their brand reputation and their brand currency that they've built up. So you'd only have so many pivots in a lifetime with a strong brand. So I don't know. Certainly,
that's what I'm saying. And this is a 180 pivot. So that seems like a huge loss to the brand, a huge knock on the brand.
Yeah. Well, speaking of huge knocks on the brand, the number one here. Okay. Number one here, by the way, this is to remind you, a non-sexual thing that is 100 times hotter than sex. Number one is Rachel Maddow telling me everything is going to be okay. Yes, a lesbian telling me everything's going to be okay while she screams about Donald Trump. Okay.
I can scream about Donald Trump and tell you everything's going to be okay while I'm inside of you. That's much more enjoyable.
Damn.
If you're into me screaming about Donald Trump, I'll do that for you.
I do not doubt that.
Number two. Youths saluting my bangs. This is not woke or joke, ladies and gentlemen. This is woke. Number three, a compilation of men laughing at my jokes and not responding with their opinion. So not this
guys,
show.
Guys, women are smart and funny, guys. Women are smart and funny.
Number four, BBW, which apparently stands for Big Beautiful Wings. She's talking about buffalo wings.
Can you imagine if a guy said that? Oh, I'm sorry, honey. I like buffalo wings more than sex with
100
you. 100
times.
Go to Buffalo Wild Wings.
Yes.
Can you imagine?
Yeah, 100 times.
Can you imagine if anyone other than a liberal posted this little video of the woman denying the black man chicken wings and not getting called a racist?
Oh God, I didn't even
think
about
that.
Like
that. Did you even realize that? Like, no. You know, the black guy just wants some wings.
Look at this video on this page, everyone. It's tremendous. It's from the Chrissy Teigen Instagram? Yeah. And the caption on this, by the way, it's Chrissy Teigen in a bathing suit laying on a raft in a pool with a plate of chicken wings on her butt and a black man reaching for it. And the caption is, "What's up, chicken butt?" Okay. We'll go through the rest pretty quickly here, but it's things like a room full of comfortable bras, girl-on-girl compliments, nice eyebrows, a fountain of iced coffee, good lighting, and a reflective surface with which to look at myself. She couldn't just say a mirror, so go fuck yourself. Idris Elba,
also called a mirror,
building an armoire from scratch using his rugged hands and a knowledge of basic woodworking. Well, doesn't that makes everyone
that,
hot? So.
That is 100%. Yeah. Go ahead, Justin.
Well, I was gonna say that is like the prime example of like how this article is fucked up. Like, if Idris Elba is in front of them and they're turned on by him using his rugged hands for woodworking, wouldn't they rather like him go to them and use the rugged hands on them?
No.
I mean, that's the only reason a woman would ever find that provocative is because of that. Like, this is a sexual thing.
Right.
I mean, it's even a sexual thing for me a little bit because it's Idris Elba. So,
I mean, look at
you
him.
Know. He is a paragon of masculinity.
Yeah.
But Z-Way, we're calling you out on this one. This one is sexual.
That's right.
So fuck off.
That's right. Or fuck on.
Can't
whatever
even
you're
be
doing.
Consistent to its own stupid ass premise.
That's right. Checking my phone after not having it all day and actually having notifications.
How do you not have notifications in today's day and age? Facebook will make up reasons to give you notifications.
That's really
they
annoying.
They will fucking notify you, like, did you know there are mobile hotspots nearby? There are Wi-Fi hotspots? Like, geez, like, this person is going to an event near you, and it's like in Phoenix, and you're in Los Angeles? That's not near me. How do you not have notifications in the year 2017?
Number 12, former President Barack Obama kite surfing with his pal Sir Richard Branson. Again. She's rubbing one out to Nat, so that's sexual. 13, Michelle Obama in any dress by any designer because there's not a silhouette this Princeton graduate can't obliterate. Again, sexual.
That's because she's going to use her fucking clavicles and shoulder bones to just tackle that shit. Like, that's why she obliterates any silhouettes.
That's right. Her bulge obliterates the silhouette. It's really what. Okay.
Yeah.
Number 14, money. Just money.
Well, that just lays it bare, doesn't
indeed.
It?
Indeed. Number 15.
But then she makes sure to say, like, oh, but just enough to... Oh, my God, we get it. You're not a materialist. Thanks, bitch.
Number 15. More TV and movie characters than that reflect how women actually speak and not some dude's wet dream. And number 16. All of these scenarios combined in what? In one hot, steamy reality. So her 16th is all the things I just listed, but in real life. Okay. Well, that's the downfall of civilization. Let's talk about someone who's actually not a douche. Christopher Nolan says he won't work with Netflix because its film strategy is pointless. Christopher Nolan optimizes his movies for the theatrical experience, including the most recent, Dunkirk, which was a 70mm IMAX experience. And he's not apologetic about that. With this in mind, it may be unsurprising that Nolan's not a big fan of Netflix, particularly its depreciation of the theatrical experience. Quote, Netflix has a bizarre aversion to supporting theatrical films, Nolan said in an interview this week. They have this mindless policy of everything having to be simultaneously streamed and released, which is obviously an untenable model for theatrical presentation. So they're not even getting in the game, and I think they're missing a huge opportunity. He then separates that, puts a crowbar right in the middle between them and Amazon, because Amazon apparently is perfectly happy to have their movies shown in theaters for 90 days before it's released on their streaming platform. Nolan went on to say, I think the investment that Netflix is putting into interesting filmmakers and interesting projects would be more admirable if they weren't being used as some kind of bizarre leverage against shutting down theaters. It's so pointless. I don't really get it. Justin, does Nolan have a point, or is Netflix God?
Well, Netflix is not God, and he does have a point, but also I just want to say to Christopher Nolan, like, you know their business model, right? Like, they're not a theater chain, so of course they want to destroy theaters, because that's to their advantage, or so they think. And I think he's making a long-term point. And before I continue, I just want to say he is right about Amazon. The Big Sick was an Amazon movie.
Oh.
So they are starting to put movies in theaters.
I didn't know that.
I would not say that's a good theatrical experience. That movie you did not need to see at all, but it definitely wasn't aided by being seen in theaters, whereas Dunkirk, it is aided by seeing in theaters, and we'll get to
but
that
But I want
to
see Majid Nawaz, like, really big, or whatever the guy's name is. Kumail Nanjiani?
Yeah, okay. Z-Way?
Racist.
Yeah. Yeah, no shit, right? That might have been arguably the most racist thing that's ever been said on this show.
Oh, please. It's not in the top 6,000 racist things that have ever been said on this show.
I'm just trying to get us canceled by Patreon, guys. That's all I'm trying to do, is get us canceled by Patreon. No, I think the point he's making is long-term. Because what Netflix is doing by destroying the theatrical experience is they're basically destroying what Nolan is saying is one of the essentials of movie making, and it's the experience of seeing the movie. Netflix is turning into a content mill where it's just, we're going to put as much content on here so people need to subscribe to be able to see it all. Whereas what Nolan's talking about is if you're designing it for the experience, you're paying more attention to the artistry. So that's what his backlash is against. I don't think he's expressing it particularly well because he's not a rhetorical communicator in that way. He's an artistic communicator. So I don't think he's communicating it well. But that's what I think he's trying to say, is Netflix taking the artistry out of it. And especially when you can just sit... What he's talking about is if you can just sit at home and watch Netflix, it doesn't matter how it sounds or how it looks, really, because you're not hyper aware of it. It's not huge in front of your face, and it's not very loud in your ears. It's just there in front of you. And that's how I interpreted what he's saying.
Yeah, James, is Nolan making sort of like a Howard Rorkian argument about filmmaking? Like, you can't just replicate the same thing for every medium. You're not taking into account the proper context.
I didn't see that here, though I wouldn't be surprised. When I read this, I basically just thought, you know what, this is not something I really understand, but it's Christopher Nolan, and I actually did sort of make a comparison to Howard Rourke. Like, there's a lot of decisions Howard Rourke makes in architecture in that book that I don't really understand, but I'm not an architect, so I just say, you know what, man, you do what you think is right in architecture, and I'm going to admire you for your integrity sticking to it. But I'm not an architect, so I don't know if that's the best way. All I know is Christopher Nolan makes pretty much... Christopher Nolan, I think, is the best filmmaker in existence right now. I can't think of anyone who comes close. There are movies that are better than Christopher Nolan movies, but none that are no filmmaker that consistently makes better movies. So, you know what? Keep doing what you're doing, Christopher Nolan. But what's your... What's that?
I'll answer that question, that I think it is a Rorkian. I think that's completely in line with what I was just saying. So I would say yes, Daniel.
Well, yeah. I mean, my reading of it is not hyper complex. I don't think Nolan is making an explicitly sort of Rorkian or objectivist argument, but it's the similar kind of approach, which is, you know, this art of filmmaking, there is an experience to it in the theater that is radically different from your experience at home. And so if I'm making a movie about Dunkirk, I wouldn't make it the same way if I was making it for a television as I would if I was making it for a 70mm IMAX experience. And Christopher Nolan is saying that making everything for a television is actually not a good business model in the long run, because you're losing this incredible experience you can have with the art. You're losing this immersive nature. I haven't seen Dunkirk yet, but he says, like, I wanted to make people feel like they were there, and you can't do that on a 50-inch, high-def TV in your home with your puppy gnawing on your foot and the neighbors constantly having sex. You just can't do that. But you can on an enormous screen that makes
I'm not your neighbor.
Fall into it. Fall into the experience. And so I think he's making a sort of argument of the same, like, you wouldn't build this building the same way no matter where you put it anywhere in the United States. You have to take into context, you know, the rock formations and the materials that you're using, and it has to be a thing that has beauty and function. And he's saying that basically dumbing this down, this filmmaking down to a television set, isn't taking that to account for the entirety of the filmmaking process. Not that it's bad always and forever, but just for this theatrical experience, it just doesn't work.
Doesn't Netflix pretty much only make things that are appropriate for the small screen? Like House of Cards, we don't need to see Frank Underwood as this giant towering thing in front of us. Like, it's fine to just watch that while the neighbors are having sex.
Yeah, I mean, perhaps. I think Nolan is arguing that they're losing out on something by not engaging in the theatrical experience. But there are some things
Right. What he's talking about, an essential of movie making. He sees the theatrical experience as an essential of movie making. I mean, somebody asked that on one of the Facebook, I think it was Midsider Ronnie, asked on Facebook why I always go to the theater the first week something comes out. And because it's a different experience. It's a different experience seeing it in the theaters in itself with the technology, but also being around the people who are excited to see it and want to experience it on the same level you do. I mean, Daniel, is it not different seeing Star Wars opening night than any other night?
Oh, totally. Totally. Yeah.
And Nolan is saying that's part of the essential. And when Netflix, you're just making it for the small screen, you're taking that away.
Yeah, I mean, even like...
That's the argument he's
absolutely
making.
Absolutely. And even like when I saw Force Awakens, and I saw it in theaters, and then I went and saw it in a 70mm IMAX theater, I was like a fucking child when, like, the music comes on and Star Wars appears. It's a completely different experience from watching it in your home. But I would say that Netflix has lost out on a little bit of that kind of stuff. So, like, they do some TV shows that have these grand scopes, for instance, that could be movies, but they decide to make them TV shows, like Marco Polo or the Medici series that they did, that have these enormous scopes, and they're so small. And it's a weird feeling to watch them try to make this huge, expansive, you know, these sweeping scenes of architecture or major battles, and they're tiny, and it's weird.
Well, even Game of Thrones, where you have the big battle at the wall that time, where they shoot it, and it's like that panning shot, and it's that one long shot. And it was very well shot, but imagine that in theaters versus on your TV screen for HBO.
Yeah. So,
and I would even argue that this is not just Netflix. I mean, let's compare Marvel and DC for a second. Let's compare Civil War to Batman versus Superman. Which of those is better on the big screen and is more part of the theatrical experience?
Martha. That one.
Yes.
Why, when we use a DC example, do we have to use Batman versus Superman? Can't we use Man of Steel?
Just because people... I only do it because people hate it so much, but yes, Man of Steel is a better movie.
Why can't we use Suicide Squad?
Because that is a terrible movie.
Speaking of Suicide Squad, I think this girl wanted to commit suicide after a ex graded her apology note and then tweeted it out to the world. By the way, she got a D- on her grammar usage. But the fallout from this is that Nick Lutz, who graded this handwritten apology note and put it on Twitter, was suspended for doing so from his university for violating the University of Central Florida's policy of student conduct because it was disruptive and harmful. Yes. I don't know. Do we need much more context than that? Because that seems insane enough as it is.
Well, is it a public or private institution?
I assume it's public. University of Central Florida?
Yeah, I believe it's public as well.
Yeah. Aren't they the... What's their mascot? Something stupid, right?
Golden Bulls or some shit?
Something like that. But just the idea here that, like, this is an interaction between two people that has nothing to do with school per se. She leaves an apology note. He tweets it out, sort of graded, sort of tongue-in-cheek, gives her a D-, but doesn't identify her, by the way. It's just the note. It goes viral, and then they suspend him for harmful and disruptive conduct. Disruptive to whom and harmful to whom? Justin?
Well, first of all, before we go into this First Amendment issue, I just want to applaud this young man for how clever it is that he gave her a D-. You know why he gave her a D-, correct? It's because he took the D away.
It's hilarious, Justin.
Oh!
I'm convinced that's why he gave her a D-. I think that's intentional. Because he could have just failed her, but he didn't fail her.
No, he's literally not giving an F. Yeah.
Ah, see, that's good too. I don't know if that one was intentional, but I do believe it's because he wanted to take the D away. But to me, this is a complete violation of the First Amendment.
Totally.
Like, you can't put this out. Like, you can't be like, look, I'm not saying you should go around and slut shame, but you know what? I'm saying you should go around and slut shame, and now he can't slut shame? Like...
It's not even slut shaming, it's grammar shaming, right? Yeah.
Well, no, it's apology shaming. Why is she apologizing?
Because I think she cheated on him, right? So it's like, he's like, no, I don't forgive you, and now I'm going to make fun of you. Like, may not be the most mature thing in the world to do, but you have the right to do it.
I thought I saw this grading like 6 months ago, so this has been around a while, I think, and they finally got suspended. So good job being in with the memes university.
Yeah, it said it. He released it 5 months ago.
Like James said. Right. Yeah, so that's when I saw it. So look at my internal clock. It's like an Adam Carolla clock. Jesus.
You were a month off. So, let's not get too cocky here. You were 30 days off at least.
My boss the other day, because we were talking about the OJ thing, he was trying to argue that Paris Hilton started the Kim Kardashian thing. And I was like, no. And he was like, but The Simple Life. And I was like, no, they were from this year to this year. And then he looked it up on Wikipedia and it was the exact years when the show ran. And I was like, yeah, take that. Adam Carolla. But no, is James right? Like, didn't she cheat on him?
I don't know. I didn't even read the note. I didn't care enough, but...
I think I did not read the note either, but I heard that... I read that somewhere in this context.
From reading the note 5 months ago, I'm pretty sure she cheated on him, and this is his, like, you know, this is his getting back at her. Apology. Yeah, rejection of the apology, which is slut shaming in a way, right? Because she can sleep with who she wants. But
no,
let me ask you this.
It's not like she hurt his feelings and he just says, no, I don't forgive you.
I have no problem with slut shaming. I want to be clear. I have no problem with slut shaming. Shame everyone for everything.
I don't know.
Everything shaming.
Slut is an anti-concept, so I don't even believe in the word. So I don't think it's okay or not
okay. See, now you're getting mad at me for slut shaming by using the word slut. Calm down, boy.
I'm going to concept shame you right now.
I unranded a lot of that.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't mean slut shaming. I mean concept shaming. Just to be clear. No hate mail from objectivists.
I want to flip this on his head. What if a woman had done this? A girl had done this to the apology that her boyfriend had written.
The headline would read something like, "Savage feminist gets back at cheating boyfriend. Read the viral note that has taken the internet by storm." That's what the headline would read.
Yeah. You won't believe paragraph 3.
Yeah.
Why do you see her annotation on his grammar?
That's right. She gives him a V minus. This would be a completely different story. Also, I did something similar to this in college that had nothing to do with an ex, but all I can think of is I would be suspended for it now, which is I wrote an article really criticizing the frat community after they did some really stupid shit over Greek week, including urinating on the music building and other nonsense stuff. So I wrote an op-ed excoriating them. Got my tires slashed, by the way, for that. So that was fun. Ooh. But in response...
See, now, if she slashed his tires, I'd be like, yeah, well, you had it coming, dude. But, like, to get the government involved, like, whatever. Like, dude, fine, you get your tires slashed. Like, fuck off, you brought it on yourself. But I am more mad at the government than I would if she slashed his tires. Is that fucked up?
Means you're from Boston, I think.
Fucked up or just Boston?
New game. Decide. That's right.
Well, it's like Carrie Underwood's song, like, you know, I dug my keys into his pretty little four-wheel drive, like, into the side of his pretty little four-wheel drive. I'm like... Yeah, well, he cheated. Like, what else was she going to do? Like, just, like, take it and leave? Like,
yes, Justin's first thought was, that's it?
Song?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway, just to quickly end this boring story, one of the members of the Greek community wrote a letter to the editor complaining about my article, except that I was the editor, so that's awesome. And he was clearly drunk when he wrote the letter, and it was fucking awful in terms of grammar and content and, I don't know, thoughts. And it turned out he was also an English major. An English education major. So I basically fucking destroyed his letter in the newspaper. And yeah, in fact, he challenged me. He said to see who was right about the Greek community, he challenged me to a basketball game.
Oh, I thought he was going to challenge you to like boy love.
To determine who was right about the Greek community. So
Daniel, can I do life over again and be in college with you?
It was a good time, except that I never drank or had dates. But other than that, it was great. Yeah.
It's all right. Mine was pretty much the same, except I didn't write letters excoriating people. I just, like, watched Star Trek Enterprise. So.
Engage.
All right. Do you want to talk about all the expertise I've gained from not getting laid in college and just watching art and learning how to write? Yeah, let's do that.
It's time for.
God damn it, James.
I was going to say it's time for, and then you'd say it. We're going to do like a thing?
We're going to do a thing. It's choreographed.
I just thought that silence. I won't. Do it. Fuck it. We'll cut this part.
No, we won't.
No, this is staying. This is gold. The Hopeful Romantic with JML. Couple quick reviews to start because nobody wants me to spoil anything because I'm the only one who goes to fucking theaters when things come out anymore except if they're Star Wars. So we were talking about Christopher Nolan and his approach to filmmaking and the theatrical experience. Well, on Friday night, I saw Dunkirk, and it's definitely you have to see it for the theatrical experience. When he's talking about putting you in the experience of being at Dunkirk, he really does that. It really is about how to survive, how they're surviving in Dunkirk. And, you know, people say like naturalism is how you feel things and romanticism you don't. If you do not have emotions during this movie, I submit the idea that there is something wrong with you. It is a powerful, powerful movie. I would describe this as Christopher Nolan's version of 300, except it's inversed because they're not attacking anyone. They're trying to escape. But this is his version of 300. So if you ever wonder what's the difference between Zack Snyder and Christopher Nolan from an artistic perspective, just watch 300 and Dunkirk back to back. Very briefly, just to give an idea of what makes this movie so interesting. The first thing is the narrative approach. So it's not told strictly linearly. It takes three perspectives: a soldier on the beach, an Air Force pilot, and a civilian boat. Because in Dunkirk, this isn't a spoiler because this is a real life event. So if you don't fucking know this, fuck off. All like there was a call by Winston Churchill to like, hey, let's go save our people, and a bunch of civilian vessels went to take the men off the beach. And it's told from that perspective, except they're time-lapsed. So the beach story is a week passing. The civilian vessels, and they focus on one civilian vessel, is a day. And the airplane, the Air Force pilot, the Royal Air Force pilot, is an hour. And you see all of these, and you're interweaving between the three, and then you see them at the end, they all come together. And that's the climax of the movie. And it's very well done. And then also the other thing that stands out, and I believe we talked about this briefly, Daniel, tell me if I'm wrong. We talked about this previously on the show. There's very little dialogue in the movie. I think that came up before.
I don't remember that coming up, but.
Okay. We had it in a conversation then. We talked about a conversation. But the dialogue is very pragmatic and very practical. And that's very intentional because this is all about a survival situation. And you're not going to, sorry, James, you're not going to like have abstract philosophical discussions like when you're purely worried about survival. So I don't know what your role, like if we were surviving right now, I don't know what your role would be. So
shooting.
I was going to say, that's true. James is better off in a survival situation than I am. Fuck, I'm a slave. Yeah. But
yeah,
society collapses and there's no Twitter. I am the bitch to the person with the biggest gun. So.
So this is a great movie. Those two techniques work really well. There was one scene that did move me to tears. I won't spoil what it is, but it's a great grand moment.
And I thought it was the Justice League trailer at the beginning.
Well, I mean, we're going to talk about that too. That did move me to tears as well, but we'll talk about that in a minute. No, all the trailers beforehand were shit. I'm so sick of like, if I see the goddamn Geostorm trailer one more time or the goddamn, Inconvenient Truth 2 one, which is like the biggest emotionalist bullshit trailer. We talked about that. Yeah. But the number of times they're like, oh my God, a hurricane flooded the construction site for the 9/11 memorial, therefore global warming. I'm like, you don't understand how science and weather works, do you? But anyway, I just get fucking pissed seeing that trailer all the time. But the trailer sucked. But I would give this movie like, I don't know, a 9 out of 10. Hmm. It may be a 10 out of 10. I don't know. Ooh. It's a very, very good movie. I don't know if it's his best, though. That's the thing. Like, my immediate reaction is...
Well, that's a high bar to set.
Right. Right. But that's the thing. That's my immediate reaction is I like The Dark Knight better. I like Interstellar better. I like The Prestige better. So that's my only reason for not saying it's like a 10. Mm. So I'll be interested to hear what Daniel and James, you guys think, because that might help my thoughts a little bit more. But it's definitely one of the best movies to come out this year, and it's great that it's out. And to see it. And if you want an antidote to all this Marvel crap that's out, go see that.
But I heard there weren't enough minorities and women in it.
There are women in it. The women die as well. But they're only nurses. I mean, what are you fucking like? Were there a lot of black soldiers in the British and French armies in World War II?
That's my point.
Not at Dunkirk.
Yeah. Although that does remind me, Midsider Steve had a comment to your review of A Handmaid's Tale.
Okay.
You said it checks all the boxes. He said there was an article on IO9 that pointed out there's not enough black people in The Handmaid's Tale, so there's one box unchecked.
there's like two. Yeah. Okay.
Oh, my dog.
Her best friend, the main character's best friend is a black woman.
I want to point something out real quick. I'm actually about to go, and once we're done recording, I am leaving to see the movie, so I'm looking forward to this. And Justin, do you think there's any similarity to the time dilation comparison between these three plot lines and the three or four dilated time plot lines in Inception? Is that like a thing that Nolan likes to do? Are you noticing any kind of parallels there? Just wondering.
Yes, and to actually use another movie that he's done to talk about this, it all goes back to The Prestige. I was having this conversation with Midsider Alfred because he was asking me about sort of like, narrative construction and movie-making theory. He really constructs it like a magic trick, where there's the pledge, the turn, and the prestige. And the time dilation is all part of that, where that's the pledge. He sets it up at the beginning that all of this time dilation will be resolved. The turn is how it's resolved, and the prestige is what the result is of that, how it's resolved. So
God,
I fucking love
this man.
Yeah. So he did, like, that's the way he makes it. And I mean, it makes sense because movies are in how many acts? They're in three fucking acts. Mm. So all of, and I don't know, I think this is just an example of what makes art good, because you can even look at Snyder's movies in this way, but Nolan very explicitly does this. And the only movie that I think it's explicitly like this is Sucker Punch of Snyder's. But all of Nolan's movies are almost explicitly about movie making as much as they are about the stories themselves. Like Dunkirk's about survival, but it's also about how we tell the story of Dunkirk. Does that make sense? Whereas The Prestige is definitely about how to make a movie. Inception's definitely about how to make a movie. I mean, what incepts people? We've seen the way that movies incept people. The way people make all these references and everything, where, you know, in grad school, people are hanging up rules from the Wedding Crashers on the wall. You're telling me that's not Inception? So all of his movies are themselves about movies. It's crazy.
Yeah. I love how there's values, there's metaphysical values, but then what so few movie makers do, and this isn't a criticism of other movie makers, just an accolade for Christopher Nolan, what Christopher Nolan has in it is actual, like, epistemological themes in his movie, is kind of what it seems to me. So that's part of why I just love Christopher Nolan. Cannot say enough good things about him. And he's a beautiful man. Look at him in that article.
Okay, you went to a weird place there. I feel like you've undone all my work of saying, like, men can admire each other non-sexually, but we'll sidestep that. Let's move on from that. And let's talk about another filmmaker who released an artistic vision this week. And something that I learned was he basically, Luc Besson, who we talked about in our Patreon-only episode about, what was the movie?
Lucy.
Yes, Lucy starring Scarlett Johansson. He apparently formed his own film studio in order to make Valerian and The City of 1,000 Planets. So it is the most expensive independent movie of all time. So regardless of what I am about to say, I want to be clear up front that I am very glad this movie exists. And it is he is making his vision the way he thinks it should be. So there's a lot to be admired about the fact that this movie even exists and was made. So I want to be clear about that. But, and again, this is spoiler free because Daniel really wants to see it, there are two things that I'm very harshly critical about with this movie. The first is the beginning is very jarring. Now, the argument could be made that it's because it's so different from everything that's come before it, that we're not used to this style of movie making, that we would be, you know, we would feel off put by it and not understand what's going on. But I'm someone who I'm even okay with, like, Sucker Punch, which most people were off put by. So if even I am watching the movie at the beginning, I'm like, what's going on? I'm really confused. None of this makes any sense. It was just like we were dropped into this world and, like, we weren't giving an entry point or anything. It just all starts happening. And it just doesn't make a lot of sense, especially because it starts with non-humans. And you just get this whole backstory of non-humans and everything in this very strange world. And it just, it didn't work for me at the beginning. And then my other thing is it basically devolves into Avatar at the very end.
Oh, yeah.
And it's just like, I wish that the story had been different, because I can create a fantastical world too, where there are beings that live in complete harmony with the planet they're on metaphysically, but that does not exist in reality. So here's the thing about romanticism. You know, we talk about, like, we don't want naturalism. We don't want it connected to reality 100%, but you still have an essential, and you have an essential of what is true. And the essential is you're emphasizing one part of reality. And when you do a thing like this, like, we'll just take Avatar, for example, because I don't want to spoil this, but when you create the Na'vi homeworld, Pandora, you've created something that's anti-reality, and then you're saying the villains in the movie are bad for being anti this thing that's anti-reality. It makes the plot nonsensical, and it makes the theme nonsensical. And that's my ultimate problem with Valerian, even with how much I liked it. Like, I liked the relationship between Valerian and Lorelai a lot. I like their banter. I like the way they interacted. There's actually a quote from the movie. I swear to fucking God, and Daniel, when you watch it, you're going to say the same thing. I was like, you know, if that quote had been in The Fifth Element, The Fifth Element would arguably be a perfect movie. I was like, that's the thing that I've always said needs to be explained in The Fifth Element. It explains why he wrote The Fifth Element the way he did, and it's in this movie. And I was like, can we just take that out, copy and paste it into The Fifth Element? Like, it, in a way, that one scene, that one line makes The Fifth Element better for me, because I'm like, oh, I get what he was doing now.
Interesting.
But because of the two things, I can't give this movie a positive review and say, go see it. Like, I would honestly say, go see it if you're willing to excuse these two things, because, Daniel, you're a Star Wars fan. There's a lot of Star Wars influence on this movie. I mean, you saw the Star Wars influence on The Fifth Element.
Yeah.
That continues even more in this movie.
Well,
so
yeah, the second part of your review, you know, worries me more than the first part. The first part to me doesn't bother me at all because of Star Wars. I mean, if it's possible for you to go back and watch the first Star Wars movie with you know, sort of brand new eyes, they literally just drop you into a world with no explanation of what's going on.
Sorry, I just fell asleep thinking about seeing the first Star Wars movie again.
You are such a prick. Apparently, though, the market agrees with you. The production budget on Valerian, apparently fucking $209 million production budget.
I thought it was 180, but all right.
It made this weekend $17
million. Yeah.
17. It opened at number 5.
It's also in very few theaters. I didn't realize that. Like, I went to look at what the movie times were this weekend. There's like a shitload of Dunkirk showings, and then there's like 4 Valerian showings, which that's probably the obstacle independent studios face, just distribution deals.
It got beat out by War for the Planet of the Apes.
That got a shitload of hype last weekend, though.
And also got beat out by Spider-Man and Girls Trip. And, of course, Dunkirk.
No.
Yeah.
Bah.
How much did Dunkirk make, out of curiosity?
Domestic, 50.5, foreign, 55.5. So almost $106 million so far on a $150 million budget.
So, yeah, it'll make money.
Oh, yeah.
Won't be his biggest hit, but it'll make money.
Yeah.
I actually, all right, let's, my review. Oh, can I put my 2 cents in on this? I saw Valerian also. I have stronger opinions about this in both directions. I really liked the first half of this, and I didn't feel at all lost in the beginning. There's this great opening for me. It's a great opening scene. Where I feel like they explain the setting pretty well, and it's so cool. I don't know, it's just, this is everything. The first scene is everything I want in sci-fi, really. Like, just the setup, where they do everything. It's just, where it's positive. I've said before, I don't like negative sci-fi. This is positive. This is very, starts off very benevolent sci-fi, which I really like. And then they just take you through this, all this crazy shit, all this crazy sci-fi shit, which I really liked. But then I actually don't like the dynamic between Laureline and Valerian, because their acting just wasn't very good, or they weren't given very good dialogue or something. Like, I appreciated the idea of the banter, but they make these two actors who are attractive actors, they make them look like they're like depressed and dying of cancer. So I don't understand that. And then they also, this guy makes human beings like deformed for some reason. Have you noticed that when they don't have to be, like when they're in a market, not to spoil anything, they're in a marketplace and they see a number of human beings, but they're like, they have like fucking weird faces and like they're bulging face. Like, what's up with that, Justin? Like, why are they deformed? How is that part of this Benson guy's vision?
The humans, I mean, he has the idea of like who the perfect humans are. And then he has like everyone else who's normal. So I think that's intentional.
Oh, okay.
I mean, if you look at like the Fifth Element, Bruce Willis isn't deformed in it.
That's true. It's all like the sort of gross, there's a bunch of gross common people who are like actually physically deformed. And that is never really explained, but he's just trying to communicate that semi-romantically. Like, oh, these
I would disagree with you. I don't see how you say Dane DeHaan is like a good looking dude. Like, I mean, you've already shown in this episode more proclivities for homosexuality, so maybe this is just your gayness coming out. But I think Dane DeHaan is not a good-looking dude. And, like, it starts with, him on the beach. And, like, dude has never lifted, like, a gallon of milk, probably. So, and then the other thing about the acting is you do know Laura Lean is played by a model, right?
Yeah, but they make both. I'm not saying he's great or anything. They could have made him fine. He looks like he's dying of cancer.
That's what he looks like, dude. Like, have you seen him? That's just what he looks like.
I don't know. They could have cleaned him up. They could have made both of them not weird and emo. Like,
look, dude, I had this conversation with Christine, who I saw the movie with, and I was just like, I don't understand how this guy has a fucking career. Like, I get he was a theatrical actor, but he played, like, Harry Osborn in the Andrew Garfield Spider-Man era, and then he was in A Cure for Wellness, and, like, the whole movie, he's like, I'm not sick, and I'm like, really? Like, I'm not convinced just by how you look. Like, I don't know how this, like, and he's not good-looking, like, put him next to Channing Tatum, right? I don't know how this guy has a career. I don't.
Yeah,
I don't.
He actually looks worse in real life. Like, go Google a picture of
him.
Looks even more... you know, like he's just stricken with leukemia or something. Like, he's fucking hideous in real life. This movie actually makes him like look like a decent human being. Yeah.
As the movie got into the bad half, like they at one point a certain celebrity makes an appearance, and I won't give it away. And then the movie
it's
just
in the
goes,
fucking trailers. Everyone knows it's Rihanna.
Okay, Rihanna shows
good.
Up. I don't remember the trailers well enough. Actually, I didn't even know that was Rihanna until Mackenzie told me in the theater. And as soon as she shows up, everything just goes completely off the rails and nothing makes sense. And then it becomes Avatar at the end. And Mackenzie like tried to comfort me as we were in the movie, like, because she could tell how much I liked the beginning, and then at the end it just started going to shit, and she was just like, okay, it's okay.
It's interesting. I liked the Rihanna stuff. I liked everything up until the reveal, and I knew, like, it was, I knew who the bad guy was,
right?
Like, right when they showed him, because he has one line and one reaction, and I go, oh, that guy's the bad guy.
And because of who
it was, like, super
him.
Obvious. Well,
okay.
Yeah.
La 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 la.
All right, let's move on. Let's move on to things that are coming out. Ready? All right.
Ready. Woo!
Trailer takedown.
So before we talk about some trailers that we're going to tackle and hug here, I just want to briefly talk about the new Justice League teaser or Justice League footage that was shown at the Comic-Con panel, mainly because some of you midsiders have requested it. So there's two things I want to point out. The first thing I want to point out is there was once again a line that brought me to tears, and this line that brought me to tears proves my brilliance as a analyst, as a literary analyst, but also it proves why Zack Snyder is doing superhero movies better than anyone else, because he gets what heroism is. And this is a line that Bruce Wayne says in the trailer, and he says, Superman was a beacon. He didn't just save people. He showed them the best parts of themselves. And I think that latter part, that second line, he showed them the best parts of themselves, is what is missing from our modern portrayal of heroism. We have this idea, this paternal idea of heroism, that it's just saving other people. I mean, think of what Marvel is. That's all what Marvel is. It's just saving other people. That's what makes you a hero. It's not about being inspiring. It's not about reflecting what's best in humanity so they see what's best in themselves. And we have a lot of people who are heroes that we get made fun of for having heroes, and I'm, you know, and me specifically, you know, with like Tom Brady, it's like, why is Tom Brady my hero? Well, because I can see in him things that show me what's the best in myself. So even though he's not saving me, he's still a hero. So I think that definition of hero is missing. And I think that is what a lot of people are missing about Batman versus Superman. That's what I talked about in my vlog, where I talk about Superman's death and how it changes Bruce Wayne. When he goes from saying, I learned a different lesson, that I grew up believing that I mean nothing, to men are still good, he's seeing what's good inside him because of what Superman shows him. And we don't get that anywhere else but Zack Snyder's superhero movies. So I'm very hopeful for this movie because of that. I still feel like I did that. They're not going to be able to cut around what he's already written. But what he's already written and directed. But directorially, the question I have, and Daniel, this is more for you because James, I don't know if you would be able to notice this as much. Does some of the footage in the trailer look like it's the reshoots Joss Whedon did? Because it doesn't look like it's visually creative. Or is that just my paranoia? Like, I'm talking about specifically, like, the close-up shots of the briefcase and, like, the shot of the Flash being like, oh, they really just disappear. That's rude. Like, the way that pans up and over, it felt like the movement was just there because the director wanted there to be movement, not that it was there for a reason.
I suspect this is probably 48% your paranoia. And 52% something, which I don't know is if it's his reshoots or what is going on. But my main criticism of the trailer, and I still want to see this movie very badly, but my main criticism of the trailer is that it didn't make it look as visually interesting as it could have been, I think. It right. sort of okay, played so you had a similar down reaction. The visual interest of the film.
Yeah.
Which is weird because it's a Zack Snyder film. So usually that's basically all that's there. And in fact, the other Justice League trailer is way more visually interesting than this thing. So
yes. So I am wondering if just for the sake of marketing, they're forefronting the reshoot quips that Whedon did and those scenes rather than the visual stuff. And then we'll get more of the visual stuff in the movie, because I don't believe these are extensive reshoots. And like I said, they're not going to be able to throw out everything he did. So I wonder if it's just for marketing, because the other interesting thing they did in this trailer, quote unquote, it's a 4-minute trailer. I mean, they started with Wonder Woman to build off of that. So they're definitely going with the approach of, oh, see another Wonder Woman movie.
Yeah.
Although I also want to point out story-wise that did you notice that the first place Steppenwolf, the villain, lands is in Themyscira?
Yes.
Which is intentional on Zack Snyder's part, because they were the fucking people who said, we don't want Diana to become Wonder Woman. And there's a brilliant narrative irony there that they're the ones who get attacked first.
Yeah, the people who withdrew.
And also, yeah. Right. And also, did you notice that Steppenwolf visually parallels Ares?
Yep.
All intentional on Zack Snyder's part, because remember, he wrote the story for Wonder Woman. So that's why I have hope for this.
I definitely have hope. I was just kind of taken aback that they didn't play up the visual elements in this teaser or whatever it was. But still going to be good, I suspect.
James, any reaction to this before we go on to taking down some trailers? Some hugs and some tackles.
I also the Age of Heroes line really got me. Yeah, I'm looking forward to this.
Yeah, the Age of Hero line was in the first trailer.
Well, yeah, so. Yeah. I mean, I'm yeah. Even it still gets me now.
Yeah. Well, I still get the Martha like line, not Martha, but like the you don't know this world a thing you never did. That still gets me. Like, it's just it's insane that these movies exist. But.
First trailer.
At the D23 Expo, DuckTales released, or Disney released, 2.5 minutes of the first episode of DuckTales. I threw it on here, we watched it, and we've been tracking the series, and I want to see if it's changed for you guys about tackling and hugging based upon this footage. For me, I'm going to say it hasn't changed. I'm still going to hug.
Hug.
I think they got Scrooge right. I think they got Mrs. Beakley right. I think they got the kids right. But the one thing that is very strange and off-putting for me is they've turned Webby into Louise from Bob's Burgers.
Yeah.
So funny. That's literally my thought. Like, I had to look up who was playing her to make sure it wasn't Luis from Bob's Burgers, and it's not. But that is basically her character. I didn't mind that. It was fun. It was interesting. It's going to take some while to get used to. I'm just still put off by Scrooge McDuck's voice. Like, it's still, it just isn't right to me. It just doesn't feel right. And I think it will after a couple episodes, but in the sneak peek, it, just a little disappointed. I don't know.
I agree with his voice, but his dialogue was vintage Scrooge, where he gets up and he admires the money bin, and then he's like, just boys will be boys, and they're going to play, and they're going to enjoy themselves and their kids. And then the whole thing of, like, when it looks like he's about to chastise Dewey, and he's like, no, if you yelled him beforehand, you're going to ruin the element of surprise. Like, that is Scrooge. One of my biggest concerns about this was they were going to modulate Scrooge backwards. They were going to make him an apologetic hero for being, like, this capitalist who loves his family and loves adventure and just loves life. But they got that. And also the fact that they're going to create this tension with him and Donald Duck, who I fucking hate Donald Duck. He's annoying. And I was worried they were making him a regular in the series. But if that's what the conflict is between Scrooge and Donald, and Donald always screwing up what Scrooge is doing, I'm with that.
James?
If I had children, I would encourage them to watch this. That is my comment.
There you go.
So that is a hug?
Yeah, it's a hug. One thing that was a little bit... I thought turning the girl duck into Louise from Bob's Burgers, which is a really good... Like, I knew I had seen that character somewhere. I sort of read that a little bit more as, like, oh, you have to make the girl the tough one. I just hate that I have to go there when I see him. You know, normally I would just think that that's funny and I'd move on, but I just always have to just be worried about these hidden motives now. It's really disappointing.
Second trailer.
A Wrinkle in Time is an adaptation of the book starring Oprah Winfrey, Mindy Kaling, Steve Trevor, what the fuck, Chris Pine is his real name in real life. I love how I associate him with Wonder Woman now. And, I mean, there's not much to say if you know the story of the book. It's about Meg, who her dad's missing, and he invented some weird, like, time universe folding, and she's discovering this whole world that exists and trying to find her dad. And that's the plot of the book, without going too deep into the sci-fi stuff. But I just want to talk about this trailer for a second, because I am going to make this relevant to Zack Snyder. And there's no way you can't make this relevant to Zack Snyder. Because we've talked about this before, about the influence of him on they're using all of these, all the way they use music in trailers and movies now, right?
Yes.
Well, it's come full circle. Sweet Dreams isn't the opening scene of Sucker Punch, which is absolutely brilliant. I cannot watch this trailer because all I think about is Sucker Punch did it better. Zack Snyder did it better. So I am tackling this just based upon that one thing.
Tackle.
Use your own fucking thing.
I did think that, goddamn, if I hear Sweet Dreams in one more fucking movie scene or trailer, I'm going to flip out. And I did.
Yeah.
I did flip out just then. So...
Yeah, I feel like I would have liked this if it wasn't, if it were not for that.
I'm not going to see this. I wasn't that impressed by the book, so I don't think the movie's going to be any better. Tackle!
So, Justin, you've related this to Zack Snyder. Is there any parallels we can draw to Tom Brady here,
though? The burning
Maybe
question.
It'll surprise us and not be as bad as we expect it to be. I don't know.
All right.
James Hawker.
So you're tackling as well?
Yeah, I'm tackling.
Tackle. Okay.
Just to be clear there.
Third trailer.
The Disaster Artist is a comedic film by James Franco and Seth Rogen about the most popular, worst movie of all times, The Room. The Room, I've never actually seen it. I'm going to see it now because of the setup for this movie. But The Room is a really bad movie by this guy named Tommy Wiseau. And then there was a book written about it called The Disaster Artist, which was all about the behind the scenes. This trailer basically shows inside the movie James Franco is playing Tommy Wiseau, and Seth Rogen is playing the director, and this is them trying to do a movie, and James Franco just can't get the line right. He can't get the scene right, and even when he gets it right, it's absolutely horrible. So for me, this is a massive hug. I thought this was absolutely hilarious. I thought James Franco was great in this role. Just the way he was like, oh, hi, Mark. And then he like throws the water bottle down and everything. Like, I'm sure it's funnier if you've seen The Room, which is why I want to see The Room now. But it was just absolutely hilarious, everything he did. And then Dave Franco sighting, he's like, oh, hi, Mark. I'm like, oh, hi, Dave. So I'm hugging this.
Hug.
Of course you are. You're hugging it with your penis for Dave Franco. Got it. Okay. I had no interest in seeing The Room, that movie. I watched part of it, and I sort of get why people think it's so hysterical, because it's genuinely fucking awful. but I have no interest in seeing this movie. But whatever. Tackle.
I'm hugging this. I've seen The Room like 6 times. It's such a just a marvel of entropy. this movie is not going. Let me just say something. This movie is not going to be as good as The Room, or not as entertaining as The Room. But it will provide us insights into The Room.
The one thing I'll say is
it will be indispensable.
The one thing I'll say is I did watch the scene of The Room so I could know what was going on in the trailer, and still, the scene in the trailer for The Disaster Artist is better than the actual scene from The Room.
You need it in context. Oh, right. You mean the acting?
I just mean acting and execution. Like, yeah, is still better.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, that's why this movie will not be as entertaining as The Room, because you could, but like, what makes The Room so funny is you could not have failed at making a movie at this level if you tried, and I mean that literally, not as an exaggeration. You could not do the things that were done if you were trying to make it a bad movie.
Final trailer.
The Shape of Water is Guillermo del Toro's latest film. It follows a mute girl who works at some sort of scientific organization or something or other, and she discovers that Abe Sapien...
No!
Hellboy...
That was my joke. No! You can't take my joke.
Sort of obvious. Is living there. And she forges this special relationship with him because they're both special people that humans don't like. And also, Michael Shannon's in here as a bad guy.
My summary of this movie was Mute Amelie fucks Abe Sapien in Hellboy prequel.
Pretty much. That's what it looks like.
Yeah.
And here's the thing. I was all on board with this until they did the whole, like, oh, humans are evil and this fictional species is so perfect that we don't understand it, and only the mute girl who's hurt can understand it. And then I was just like, fuck you, Del Toro. Like, this is a fucking, just thematically, the ideas behind this movie are so reprehensible. It doesn't matter how good it looks and how awesome Michael Shannon is. It's just that, like, I don't want anything to do with this movie.
Right. Go make another Pacific Rim that I'm willing to watch. But
he is making
good.
It.
Stop making this crap.
And your boy John Boyega is in it.
Yeah. He's a racist.
John Boyega. What's his name?
Yeah, Boyega. Right?
That's not Bodega?
No, it's not. Right. No, it's not Pagoda. It's not Abe Pagoda. Tackle.
James Tackle.
This movie looks good, but, like, I would watch this movie, actually, believe it or not, just qua movie, but basically... Whenever I see stuff like this, I just immediately think, okay, yeah, like, we're just gonna have a movie that denounces science and the white man. It almost doesn't matter how good the rest of the movie is. When you have this sort of setup, I'm immediately going to be worried that that's going to be the entire goddamn theme of the movie. So tackle.
I know why you're apologizing for it. I mean, I think we're all in agreement to tackle here. That's a weird thing to apologize for.
Isn't the Shape of Water whatever container it's in?
Yes.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's not a very well-named movie either. Like, It's exactly like you said, like, oh shit, I was like, Shape of Water, this sounds like it could be interesting, like Pan's Labyrinth, where it's like this weird new movie, and it's like, I was like, but it's a Hellboy prequel.
Yeah.
Like, that's where we went with this? Like, okay. Yes. Let's talk about other things, though, that we might want to apologize for. I mean, maybe, because you know where it comes from. It's time for Reddit on Reddit.
These things are all on Reddit. Mostly pics of felines, comma, boring felines. These things are all on Reddit. No, we didn't post it, but we will repost it.
First Reddit, if you were O.J. Simpson, what would you be doing right now?
Hashtag obvious joke. Finding the real killer.
I didn't even go there.
No. Okay. Probably moving to Los Angeles and then getting my own reality TV show and raking in as much money as I can possibly get because I'm 70 years old.
That is a very logical answer.
Thank you.
What a way to bring the show down with logic there, Daniel.
Yeah, Daniel.
And the show has reached
a
new
low. You're
having
a nice irrationalist shitstorm.
Yeah.
You wouldn't, like, go to Vegas or something, or you wouldn't, like, kill someone? Like, you're OJ, like, wouldn't you just start murdering people?
No, what?
This is what I would do if I were OJ. I would buy a lot of gloves that don't fit. Use them to murder people and leave them at the crime scene and then be like, they don't fit. Like, I didn't do it, man. Like, they don't fit. That's
Did
what
you
I
hear
would do if
the
I were
Corolla
OJ.
Show had, they were trying to figure out the over-under on whether or not O.J. Simpson would eventually be golfing with Donald Trump.
No.
What do you think? Because they're both, he wants to belong to Mar-a-Lago golf course, apparently, or something. Country club, whatever that is. So, yeah. Anyway. I would not be doing that if I was Donald Trump, but anyway.
I'm really glad we've compared O.J. Simpson to Donald Trump as much as we have on this show, because I feel like Donald Trump gets compared to a lot of people he doesn't deserve to get compared to, but I don't know, O.J., I'm happy with the comparisons we've drawn today. A+.
Although, you know, if he wanted to make the most money he could possibly make in his life, what would a news agency pay for an exclusive interview in which he admits to murdering Nicole? What's the over-under on that number?
Maybe that's the answer to this question.
That's got to be in the tens of millions of dollars.
It's double jeopardy, right? If he does that, he can't go to jail.
Right. He's already been found criminally liable, or I'm sorry, civilly liable and criminally innocent. So there's nowhere else to go. He has complete immunity.
But what if somebody kills him in vigilante justice?
They could, sure. But I'm just saying, like, how much would that be worth to CNN or MSNBC or whatever? Like, more than $10 million?
Seems more like a BuzzFeed thing.
It's
priceless.
Here
are the six reasons O.J. Simpson killed Nicole and
Rob. Or Vice? What would Vice pay for that?
That's true.
Yeah. Just saying. OJ, I'll be your agent. Give me a call. I'll only take 10%.
Oh my God, don't even say that.
Yeah, I don't know, man, how I would feel about you if you made money off of O.J. Simpson admitting he killed Nicole and Ross.
I know how I'd feel.
Rich is how you'd feel.
Well, when you put it that way, yeah, OJ, call us. I didn't know I was getting some of this money.
It's called hush money, guys.
Sweet, sweet.
It's even funnier because the Bills fans would be so mad that he would be doing with Patriots fans. So it's like, you're just fucking us again, OJ.
That's right. If there's one guy who could turn this around for OJ, it is Bill Belichick. Just putting that out there.
That's my favorite OJ meme, where they blame the Buffalo Bills for OJ killing Nicole and Ron.
God. All right, that's enough. That's enough juice for today. I'm feeling diabetic.
Oh, next Reddit, which will make you feel something or other. So, this has a long post associated with it. I'm just gonna do some excerpts from the long post as well. So it said, "This is from 2X Chromosomes, which is like the subreddit where women go to complain about like men and shit. What is wrong with me that no men actually want to pursue a relationship and are only interested in FWB, which is friends with benefits, / hookup? I feel like I don't respect myself." That's the first thing I want to emphasize. Then there's a line in here. This is a 20-year-old college girl. I've slept with 9 guys, which I feel like is a ton for my age, and I feel really disgusted with myself. Now, she slept with them, and she wasn't in a relationship with any of them. She wasn't dating any of them. And then under her TLDR, which for you non-internet listeners, I honestly don't think we have a listener over the age of 35. Like, any old person who's listened to this show has been like, yeah, you guys are really smart, but I fucking hate your vulgarity. So fuck you. So this is the too long didn't read. 1, I can't find a guy actually interested in a long-term relationship. 2, I can't find a guy interested in me whatsoever without putting out. 3, please tell me things will get better. I'm really fucking depressed. Fuck you. I don't care about all that. But what I want to emphasize is the lack of self-respect and the I can't find a guy interested in me whatsoever without putting out. So this is an interesting thing for me, for our culture. Like, I think the reason she can't find a guy is because she has no self-respect. It's like, you have to learn to love yourself first, right? But where does this idea come from that, like, you should be able to date someone and be in a relationship without having sex? To me, that's incredibly fucked up. Like, that's an essential of a relationship, is it not? Or is that just my oppressive male patriarchal view?
Is she saying that? I don't think there's any implication that she wants a relationship with no sex. She wants.
She's saying, I can't find a guy interested in me without putting out. That's insinuating that all guys want is the sex from her.
But she's saying without, I don't know, you could, if you read that in context, she's not saying that putting out is per se a bad thing. She's just saying, hey, I've slept with 9 guys. It seems like a lot. Is there something wrong with me? I think she's asking good questions for herself. Like, she's lost, but she's starting to admit you have a problem. Because usually when you do that, you do have some sort of self-esteem problem, especially if she's attracting guys who aren't interested in a relationship and they just want that one night and that's it, just to kind of just go for a ride and that's it.
Yeah, I don't know where to go with this post, so I'm gonna go stupid. 1, if you want some practical advice that is not practical at all, date radically traditional Catholic guys and or Mormons. They will not be interested in having sex with you, I promise. Or they are, but they won't. And then 2, you're 20. You're 20. What kind of relationship are you looking for? You're 20. Calm it down. Relax. Focus on yourself. Focus on your school. Focus on understanding what you want in life, both professionally and personally. Eventually, you will find someone to have a relationship with. I don't mean that you should not try eventually, but my point is right now, focus on you. Get your life in order. You're 20. You don't know what you want. Focus on that first. Then you'll find love.
Yeah. I mean, that's similar to what I was saying about, like, if you're saying, I feel like I don't respect myself, then, like, yeah, focus on that. And, you know, stop using sex as a self-esteem boost, because that's really what she's doing. It's like, I don't like myself, yeah, but I feel good when someone fucks me, so I'm going to do that. Like, no, that's not the purpose of sex. Stop.
She's making all kinds of mistakes, and her post indicates the sorts of mistakes that, like, you're pointing out, Daniel. But at least she's saying, hey, maybe there's something wrong with me. Think about this is 2X chromosomes. She could be saying, like, ugh, why are guys such pigs and they just always want to hook up? Like, no, there's something wrong with me. Like, these guys don't want a long-term relationship with me. She's not blaming them. She's saying, maybe I need to improve my... That's a first step.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's a great point you're making about it. But I do think part of the subtly harmful culture we have right now is that she would even put in that part about, like, they're only interested in me unless I put out. That's what I'm saying is it's a subtle indication of mixed premises that she has that are dangerous.
Right. It's a package deal. Yeah.
Right. That's why I was emphasizing it. I was saying, no, the issue isn't the sex. It's, you know, you're having the sex for the wrong reason.
She wants less of the package deal is what she wants.
Oh,
that's what they say. They always say that, but they don't mean that. Yes. They just say that in case you're small. All right, next Reddit. Sirius, who could become a unifying, wise, trustworthy, and charismatic presidential candidate for 2020? And when you click through, I don't know, Daniel, did you do this? And you click through and see the first person they mention is Al Franken.
Yes.
Like, what are you? How can you be that fucking disconnected from reality that you say Al Franken is the one that's going to unite America? His eyebrows would divide America.
Literally, one half of America has to stand on one side of his eyebrows and the other on the other. They're just that big. The other answers here are like,
what if he got a unibrow, maybe he could unite us.
The other answers here are like Joe Biden. Like, how fucking are Democrats that far up their own ass right now?
Joe Biden is the candidate.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, they are.
Oh my god.
Jesus, Democrats, get your shit together.
Yeah.
Call me, I'll consult.
Do you want Trump? Because this is how you get Trump.
But on the other side, you know, someone on here, a conservative in here, writes Trey Gowdy. It's like the guy who said that Hillary should be in prison for murder because of Benghazi. I don't think he's going to quite unify the country. So the answer to this question is no one, and that's fine.
Yep.
I mean, if you look at history, like landslide candidates get 60% of the vote. Like that's unifying the country. Like it just doesn't happen. We disagree on things. That's how it works, and it's fine. We don't need some candidate who picks a little bit of this and a little bit of that and is like, I don't really stand for anything, but vote for me because I can unify the country. Fuck that guy or girl. They're not worth it. We need someone who actually has ideas, good principles. It's not going to happen because our culture sucks and politics is downstream of culture. So if you want someone who's quote-unquote more unifying and a better politician, stop having shitty ideas, then we'll get better candidates. For someone I think who could unseat Donald Trump by building a coalition is someone like Mark Zuckerberg, who I think is going to run for president. I think he's going to be a hardcore leftist, but I think he's going to run. But I don't know. Politics is totally different now. It's totally different post-Trump. Better or worse, it is completely shaken up on the national level. So we will see what happens. I have no fucking clue.
Ditto. I just want to be clear that I think it's no one as well, and that you're fucking looking for a pragmatic solution to a long-term ideological abstract problem, and that doesn't exist.
Yeah, yes. That's a good way
but
to
if Al Franken runs, I hope he chooses Jill Stein as his VP candidate.
Oh, God.
Because their ticket will be Frankenstein? Thank you.
Wow, it was a long way for that joke, but it was worth it. I was just thinking, can you imagine if Al Franken runs for president and then a former SNL cast member has someone on SNL impersonating him? Like, would our culture just implode at that point?
Would he go on SNL to impersonate himself?
Yeah, and make fun of himself? That'd be crazy.
Yes, I'm Al Franken, and I'm good enough, smart enough, and doggone it, people want me to be their president. Oh, he's such a shit person. Okay.
All right, gentlemen, what did we learn this trip? Daniel?
Well, I learned that I'm with OJ, and I'm unapologetic about it. Call me. 10%.
James?
One thing that I learned that I didn't mention earlier is just, even this guy, this kid who is defending himself, his free speech rights. If you look at his note defending his free speech for his, giving his, ex-girlfriend the D-, he says like, of course speech isn't unlimited, but da 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 da. And I got so mad at that. So I learned that I got mad. So I didn't really learn anything there. I just wanted to mention that he kind of undercuts his own argument, and that made me mad.
That's
what did you learn, Justin?
That's a reach. I learned not. That I finally need to – I mean, it was a reach for learning something because you didn't learn anything, you douche.
That's right.
Right. It wasn't a reach. I'm not calling your anger a reach. Like, fuck off. Now, I learned that I actually finally need to sit down and see if I can make it through the room. I've never tried to watch that movie. I have a hunch that I'm going to try and watch it and be like, this is so bad. Like, I don't want to continue to watch this, but I'm going
to
try.
If you were a normal person, I'd tell you to watch it drunk, but you're not. But if you're a normal person.
Yeah, I'm a healthy person.
Yeah. But if you in the audience are normal people who drink booze or not, we don't really care. You can leave us a 5-star review on iTunes or Google Play. Either one. We like both the Apple people and the Android people, even though the Android people are immoral. We still like you both. You can leave a 5-star review there. That helps us move up the ranks, helps us move past Welcome to Night Vale, our arch enemy. Even if you hated the show, tell us that you fucking hated the show and our vulgarity, and then just click the 5-star button, because that's all I really care about. If you can subscribe while you're there to get the latest episodes delivered right to your listening device of choice. If you don't want to do any of that, you can always go to themidside.com/podcast and listen to all the previous podcasts from Welcome to the Midside. And some other content there as well. Stuff written by Justin, some other podcasts, some dick pics. Whatever you want, it's all there. Speaking of dick pics, we're on Snapchat at The Midside, or on Instagram at The Midside, or on Twitter.com/TheMidside, Facebook.com/, you guessed it, The Midside. We're very clever here.
On Instagram now, I'm trying to do my like immediate reaction to movies. So I did it for Spider-Man. I did it for Dunkirk this week. I didn't do it for Valerian for reasons. But I did it for Dunkirk. So you'll get my immediate reactions there.
That's right. In case you thought this show was ranty, go watch those.
No, it's very true. He's right. So if you enjoy me ranting, such as like, I know Midsider Mark loves, I think Midsider Mark's favorite episode was when I got angry about the 4-game suspension for Brady getting handed down right before we recorded. So if you enjoy that, then you'll enjoy following me on Instagram, following the podcast on Instagram.
That's right. And then, of course, one way you can help us significantly is becoming a Patreon subscriber. That's patreon.com/TheMidside. Patreon is a platform that allows us to collect money every time we publish content. So you sign up and you say, I'm willing to give Welcome to the Midside $1 every time they publish an episode. So if we take a couple weeks off, you give us no money. But if we publish an episode, you choose to give us a dollar. That helps us keep the lights on, which is fun. I love lights. And it's summer here, so I don't have as many lights on as I normally would, but I do like to turn them on just to piss off environmentalists, which is fun.
I have my fan running. Keep the fan on.
Keep the fan on. But if you don't have money to give us, that's perfectly fine. We understand that. We're all poor. You can, though, tell a friend. Tell a friend. Tell an intelligent monkey. Tell anyone who can subscribe on iTunes or Google Play who might like the shit that we talk about on a weekly basis and who is particularly not offended by vulgarity. But if you have no money or no friends, fuck off. We don't need you.
And I just wanted to emphasize something Daniel just said. I know there are you fuckers are out there. I know you're the people out there who are intelligent and you're intellectual and you think in ideas on the level that we do. And you're just tired of people like pussyfooting around and like not being vulgar about things. And you're tired of political correctness. So send those people to us. That's who we're looking
for.
The
galt right. The
people who want to shame people. Yeah, the galt right. The people who want to shame people. That we're not like, we're not ashamed of shaming people. Don't shame us.
That's right. We need to shim sham this shame shaming. Thanks to Liberty.me for getting us out to the libertarian audience. While we disagree on some things, libertarians, we still do love you as long as you're not smoking pot in our face. Thank you. And until next time, I love you, and we'll see you soon.
This concludes your journey into The Midside. I'm Justin Emelzeski reminding you that if things get tough, take a step back and witness the farce.
Have a day.
You know, I wait for pause because I cut in the audio of it saying trailer, like first trailer, last trailer. Like, that's why I wait for pause. So when you fucking like mumble and like you mumble and whisper, like you're like the things you're mumbling and whisper to Mackenzie while you're making love to her, like it's fucking creepy.
I was wondering why you weren't saying anything.